3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting a major earthquake kills hundreds across South Asia. A major quake struck a remote area of northern Afghanistan Monday, killing nearly 300 across South Asia, with hundreds more injured. The quake registered a magnitude 7.5 and was followed by at least two tremors. It was centered deep beneath the Hindu Kush Mountains in Afghanistan's sparsely populated Badakhshan province, which borders Pakistan, Tajikistan, and China. Nazif Shirani of Indiana University grew up in the region.
It's extremely mountainous, very rough terrain, and very earthquake-prone. Earthquake essentially is part of people's lives in that part of the country.
The massive quake triggered landslides in mountainous northern and northwest Pakistan. Reports say buildings swayed in the Indian capital, New Delhi, forcing office workers out into the streets. The quake comes nearly 6 months after a devastating tremor in Nepal killed thousands and destroyed hundreds of thousands of homes. The opposition in the Republic of Congo says the low voter turnout for Sunday's referendum on constitutional changes was a slap in the face of longtime ruler President Denis Sassou Nguesso. The turnout, estimated to have been about 10% of the electorate, reflected the opposition's call for a boycott. Opposition leader Pascal Tsati Mabiala of the Pan-African Union for Social Democracy says the turnout totally discredits the referendum. He said the smart thing for the government to do now is to annul the results. Mr. Sassou Nguesso sought the changes to clear the way for extending his rule beyond the Constitution's two-year limit, while also changing the age limit of 70 on all presidential candidates. He has ruled the country for much of the past 36 years. This is VOA News. A raid on an Islamic State cell in southeast Turkey left two Turkish policemen and seven militants dead. The firefight occurred as police raided multiple houses Monday in the mainly Kurdish city Diyarbakir. Authorities have blamed the IS group for a double suicide bombing in Ankara early this month that killed more than 100. Meanwhile, the U.S. and Russia are trying multilateral diplomacy to try to find ways to end the nearly five-year civil war in Syria. John Kirby is a U.S. spokesman.
There will be a follow-on multilateral meeting. It could happen as soon as, perhaps, the end of this week. Details are still coming together, so I really don't have much in terms of specifics to offer you today, except to say that, as the Secretary said himself last week, it's important to continue this dialogue, these discussions, toward trying to arrive at the modalities of a political transition. The Secretary believes that the momentum is moving in the right direction, and that's why it's important, in his view, to continue to meet with partners in the effort.
The Russian Foreign Ministry says Moscow and Washington have discussed the prospects for an internationally backed political settlement that would involve Syrian authorities and patriotic opposition. Indonesia's President Joko Widodo has cut short his first state visit to the United States to deal with regional haze from raging forest fires. During his meeting with President Obama, he announced through an interpreter he intends to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement with the U.S. and 11 other Pacific Rim countries.
Indonesia is an open economy, and with the 250 million population, we are the largest economy in Southeast Asia.
And Indonesia bermaksud untuk bergabung dengan TPP.
And Indonesia intends to join the TPP.
Mr. Widodo, the first Indonesian leader to visit the U.S. in a decade, he took office a year ago as an outsider, promising change in the world's most populous Muslim country. The U.S. military is sending the USS Lawson guided missile destroyer to within 12 nautical miles of China's artificial islands in the South China Sea. The destroyer, likely partner with a surveillance aircraft, will patrol near reefs in the Spratly Archipelago. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
The president, actually, when he was standing next to President Xi out in the Rose Garden, indicated that the United States would operate, fly, or sail anywhere that international law allows. You know, that certainly includes the ability of our Navy to operate in international waters. This is, you know, a critically important principle, particularly in the South China Sea, because there are billions of dollars of commerce that flow through that region of the world every year.
China has warned it will not allow any country to violate the airspace of the Spratly Archipelago. The World Health Organization says it's removing Nigeria from the list of polio-endemic countries after the West African country reported no new cases of the disease for the past 15 months. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda police defend treatment of opposition FDC supporters.
There's a new strategy, a strategy of nudity to make political statement, which is very unfortunate. And it's only happening in one party, the FDC. The FDC women are the ones doing this stripping.
James Baba is Uganda's Minister of State for Internal Affairs. South Sudan rebels signed security arrangement agreement for the transitional period. We'll talk about the plight of Eritrean refugees as they transition through Milan, Italy. And the European Union wants consultations with Burundi's government on the way forward in the country's political crisis.
I think the EU wants a dialogue with us. And we are not saying that we are against the dialogue. What we are saying is that we need to sit down and talk. And before we do that, no side has the right to place judgment on the other side.
Ali Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe rejected Confucius Prize, Peace Prize, and more Zimbabwean men get circumcised to reduce the risk of HIV infection. Those stories plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's Minister of State for Internal Affairs is defending the police treatment of opposition members, saying the treatment is in line with the role of the police under the Constitution. James Baba says the police have not been heavy-handed in their dealing with opposition, but rather they have been responding to defiance by some members of the opposition. Earlier this month, a female official of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, the FDC, Fatuma Zaina, was stripped naked on live television as the police tried to prevent FDC leader Chisa Besigye from holding a provincial rally. Baba says Ms. Fatuma stripped herself naked and is blaming it on the police. Still, Baba said he has appointed an independent commission of inquiry to look into the matter.
The role of the police is to maintain law and order granted by the Constitution and operationalized under the Police Act. And many Ugandans appreciate the work of the police in making Uganda stable and peaceful. What is happening now is that during this election period, like many elections in our region, temperatures are heightened, activities are heightened. So the police are overstretched in their work. And worse still, many people don't want to obey the laws. They want to do things their own way. So defiance automatically comes into conflict with the machinery of maintaining law and order.
The criticism is that the police have been too heavy-handed when trying to apply their role to the opposition.
I told you they are not heavy-handed. They are responding to defiance. The police has the authority to maintain law and order. If the police officer gives you an order, please don't go this direction, and you cease, obviously there will be a clash. They have to be dispersed because the right to demonstrate, the right to participate is not absolute. Other people also have rights. These rights go with obligations.
I want to give you a chance to describe for me from the perspective of the police what happened. This lady for the FDC, Fatuma Zaina, she claims that she was disrupted by the police.
I met the ladies yesterday in my office. All of them came from the women's group, from the Women's Human Rights Watch. They were all there. We also played to them a version of what other networks captured. It clearly showed the woman stripped herself. But they are insisting police strip us. So it is their word against our word. So what I have done, I'm going to appoint an independent inquiry to look into this, not involving the police, but I'll involve a representative of the women's group so that we go to the bottom of this thing. You see what is happening now? There's a new strategy, a strategy of nudity to make political statement, which is very unfortunate. And it's only happening in one party, the FDC. The FDC women are the ones doing this stripping. So this strategy of nudity as a strategy for making political protest is totally unacceptable in our cultures, in our behavior.
Is that the view of the police that Fatuma, the lady from the FDC, stripped herself naked?
Yeah, that's the view of the police and other networks. We are not the only ones who captured that episode. Other networks also covered. Private networks, we also got evidence from them.
James Baba is Uganda's Minister of State for Internal Affairs. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Burundi's foreign minister says his country is open to dialogue with any country or group of countries concerning the political crisis in Burundi. But Alain Nyamitwe says any such dialogue cannot be threatening or judgmental. This comes as an EU ministerial meeting in Luxembourg Monday sent a letter to the Burundian government calling for consultations on what it calls non-respect for the protocol of the Cotonou Agreement, which governs economic and development relations between the EU and the African, Caribbean, and Pacific countries. The EU recently expressed concern about the political crisis in Burundi, which led to President Pierre Nkurunziza's controversial re-election, a move that his critics call a violation of the Burundian constitution.
I think one has to put things into proper context. We are talking about the Cotonou Agreement. And when one talks about an agreement, you understand two sides. There is the side of the ACP member states and the side of the European Union. Now, the EU has her opinion on how the affairs are being conducted in the member state, but it does not have the right to decide vis-a-vis that other state. That is why this dialogue has been called upon. And we take it in that spirit and in that spirit only. We want to have that opportunity for us to lay down our own defense, to clarify a number of issues which might have not been clear to the EU and to other partners maybe. Clearly, what we want is peace in the country. What we want is more democracy in the country. What we want is more partnership with the EU and with other partners.
Part of the letter was quoted in an article saying that the consultations they are requesting will allow your country or your government to present your program as it concerns democratic principles, human rights, and governance.
Again, let me just tell you this, that we take it as a dialogue process, and we believe that one side cannot have a judgmental attitude. I think the EU wants a dialogue with us, and we are not saying that we are against the dialogue. What we are saying is that we need to sit down and talk. And before we do that, no side has the right to place judgment on the other side. Let me be very clear. We believe that we have obligations under that agreement. We also have rights, and they also have obligations vis-à-vis the ACP member states. So until such a time when we have sat down and discussed the issues, I believe it is too early to make pronouncements. We have always sought the good of the country. We have always sought the best interest of the country. And we will take that opportunity to demonstrate point blank that what we did, we wanted more democracy in the country. We wanted more peace. There might have been problems, there might have been errors. Like I say, we are not white as snow, but we will have the opportunity and the chance to explain what really happened in the country. But no one side has the right to make pronouncements or judgment.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Rebels loyal to former South Sudan Vice President Riek Machar on Monday signed an agreement in Addis Ababa on security arrangements during a transitional period. The government signed the agreement last month at a workshop in the Ethiopian capital, but Machar's SPLM in opposition refused to sign then, saying it disagreed with the proposal to deploy several thousand troops in the capital, Juba. As Eskindo Freyo reports from Addis Ababa, even as the rebels signed the agreement yesterday, they still said they had reservations.
5,000 government troops will be deployed in Juba to guard military barracks, bases, and warehouses. And 3,000 will make up a joint integrated police force that will patrol the capital. Machar's negotiators refused to sign the document last month, saying the force that would guard military facilities should include opposition troops. The opposition also argued that sending thousands of troops into Juba would negate one of the conditions of the peace agreement signed in August, namely that the capital should be demilitarized. But today, the opposition finally agreed to the number of troops that will be deployed in Juba, in both forces. But a spokesman for the SPLA-MIO, William Duck, says that is the only condition the two sides have agreed on. Duck says the opposition still wants the military guard to be made up of equal numbers of SPLA and opposition troops, and is calling for talks on the issue to continue.
Now, I think the talks will be between now, the government and the IGAD Plus, because they ordered us to sign the minute, and we have signed the minute. Now, our question, will they sign our reservation that all our forces can be divided together, because we need to finalize the suffering of our people.
Duck says the opposition also has strong reservations about the number and makeup of the presidential guard and two battalions that were created by the IGAD Plus peace deal. The chief mediator for IGAD at the long-running South Sudan peace talks, Yu Masfen, says the two sides in the conflict will continue to discuss security arrangements until they have ironed out their differences.
Now, the SPLA in opposition has decided to sign those minutes, and the parties in the meeting have agreed to immediately continue their meeting until and when they address all concerns as expressed in the minutes and chapter 2 of the agreement.
Seyum says there are still many details to hammer out, but he's optimistic that the two sides will eventually reach consensus. South Sudan's Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Bashir Bandi says his side will try to erase the opposition's reservations with the security arrangements as the talks continue.
The agreement is very clear, but we are flexible. We will discuss and see how we can address their concerns and see how we can really build the confidence between the parties.
The security arrangements are seen by IGAD and its international partners as a key provision of the peace deal signed in August. For VOA News, I'm Skander Freo in Addis Ababa.
Today's Tuesday, October 27th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Hundreds of Eritrean refugees transit through the city of Milan, Italy, each day after they arrived by boat. Most of them will go on to other European countries, but they only have 7 days to decide how to move on, often by train. This rush makes them susceptible to smugglers. Segehans Wedoslasi fled Eritrea in 2007 and settled in Milan, and now works with the refugees who transit through Milan's central station. He explains to Ricky Stryer why people are leaving Eritrea and what struggles they face when they arrive in Italy.
Milan is very known for Eritrean refugees, and there are many young people coming from Eritrea. Every day they are coming more than 200 children with small babies, pregnant, and they are crossing with the desert and crossing the sea, and that one makes you sad, because the small country producing this kind of many refugees makes you sad. This makes you to understand that in the country there is nobody is remaining, and that means there is no hope in the country. That's why people are leaving the country. They are more tired of being waiting for something we check. And as much people seems to like leaving everything and leaving the country, leaving their home, leaving everything and coming here to Milan.
And here in Milan, what kind of situation are they finding?
In Milan, they are unknown people. Like, they're not registered near anywhere. But they are getting a small help, like, for 7-8 days to stay in some place, in some centers. And after inside, like on these 8-7 days, they have to decide and get a money and to go to the place where they want. But if they want to stay more than 8 days, that means they have to ask an asylum in Italy. So people that have to run to do these things on these 7 days, and they lack some information, because where to go, how to get the money, how to like, because people, they ask money from their parents, so they have also some problems getting the money, because they don't have documents, so they have to go ask somebody to help them to get the money and to cross, or somebody help them to buy the ticket. And some people, they find some bad people, like asking them money even to buy the ticket. And challenging all these things, they have to finish on 7 days and cross to other countries.
When you're talking to people, what is the main reason they're giving for leaving Eritrea?
Most people, they give you the reason of military. give you the reason of like life is very expensive and they didn't manage even to live on the country.
When you say military, what do you mean exactly?
Actually, the word military is wrong because every country has a military. But these people, they are not military. They are slaves, like working for indefinite with the work or with the situation they didn't choose. That means they are obliged to do service. They call it service, but it's not service. There is no unlimited service for the country. But they work like indefinitely as a military and without any payment. That means this is slavery.
And when did you leave Eritrea? What year?
I leave in 2007. And, it was like 8 years ago. And at the same time, I was a slave for some time. So I have worked for free, 2 years, 3 years. And I decided not to be a slave.
That was Segehan Weldoslassie, a cultural mediator with Progetto Arta. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Milan, Italy. President Robert Mugabe has rejected the Confucius Peace Prize, which was awarded him last week by a Chinese organization. The award generated controversy in Zimbabwe and around the world. Mr. Mugabe's spokesman, George Charamba, writing in the state-controlled Herald newspaper, said the president did not recognize the Peace Prize. The Opposition Movement for Democratic Change spokesman, Albert Gutu, says President Mugabe does not deserve the award.
As the MDC, we are actually very happy that President Robert Mugabe has seen it fit to actually reject this Confucius Peace Prize, because it is actually laughingstock. It is actually a global, you know, big joke. This prize is purporting to be a rival prize to the Nobel Peace Prize. And I believe that Mr. Mugabe's advisors found it necessary to advise him properly. And for that, at least once, I should actually thank his advisors to say, look, it was actually going to be very embarrassing and very demeaning, indeed humiliating, for him to go all the way to China to receive a dubious prize from a very dubious, you know, organization, which even the Chinese government itself does not recognize or does not even give any credit to. So I think at the end of the day, this was actually much ado about nothing, and we are happy that at the end of the day, sanity has prevailed.
But the fact that President Mugabe was in the first place recognized for his role in Africa and in the country, what does that mean?
This was actually an insult to the majority of the people of Zimbabwe. We have suffered tremendously at the hands of Robert Mugabe's repressive regime. We also think this was actually an attack on human rights, an attack on freedom. So at the end of the day, even if this was a legitimate organization, it was not going to be proper and justifiable to give any peace prize of whatever description or nature to a man in the mold of Robert Mugabe.
That was Albert Gutu, spokesman for the Zimbabwe Opposition Movement for Democratic Change. He spoke with Jonga Kandimiri of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Zimbabwe is one of the countries hardest hit by the AIDS epidemic. For the past couple of years, the government has been urging men to get circumcised, a procedure that the World Health Organization says lowers the risk of getting infected with the HIV virus. Now, officials are pushing the newly introduced ring method, which makes circumcision much easier. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from the rural district of Shurugui.
These men have just been circumcised using the ring method. They watch a football match as others undergo the procedure in a nearby tent. The technique involves inserting a plastic ring inside the foreskin. A rubber ring is placed on the outside. The ring blocks the blood flow to the foreskin, and in a few days, both the ring and the foreskin can be removed. In 2009, the government set the target to have 1.3 million men circumcised by 2017 to slow the spread of HIV. Zimbabwe was falling short of this target with the surgical method, according to Mauven Nyamana, the chief medical officer in Shurugui Rural District. He says the ring method introduced this year has made a big difference.
We are seeing that a lot of particular population were not keen on coming for circumcision, especially the young adults and the older men ranging from 18 to around 29 are now willing to come because of this method, which saves time. They just want to come in and go with no injections, with less hassles, and continue with their daily business as usual.
He says the ring method is less painful and less expensive. An 18-year-old man heads out to play football after his procedure. He says with the ring method, you can do all your usual chores. He says some people like me were afraid of surgical circumcision, but there's nothing to be afraid of with the ring method. Nothing has changed since I got the ring on me. The World Health Organization says there's compelling evidence that male circumcision reduces the risk of HIV infection in men by approximately 60%. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Shurugwe, Zimbabwe.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sponsoring here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with handball. Angola's Primeiro de Agosto outplayed Republic of Congo's ABO Sports 34-26 as Egypt's El Ahly dismissed the Democratic Republic of Congo's Heritage 34-23 in the women's contest at the Africa Handball Club Championships in Nador, Morocco on Monday. Angola's Petro Atletico beat Cameroon's FAP 34-27 and Ivory Coast's Africa Sports edged Gabon's Phoenix 26-22. In the men's contest, Tunisia's Club Africains edged Egypt's Zamalek 28-24. Gabon's Stade Mange beat Rwanda's Police 37-20. Tunisia's Esperance outplayed Cameroon's FAP 40-23. And Egypt's El Ahly dismissed Morocco's Wydad 26-19. In an all-Democratic Republic of Congo showdown, JSK outplayed Police 38-8. Nigeria's Niger United outplayed Republic of Congo's Interclub 36-26. And Egypt's Alexandria pipped Morocco's Hilal Atletico 21-20. Turning to athletics, Kenyan Vivian Cheruiyot won the women's event at the Great South Run 16-kilometer road race in Portsmouth, England on Sunday. Cheruiyot's winning time of 51 minutes and 17 seconds is the all-time fifth fastest by a woman. Meanwhile, Ugandan Moses Kipsiro prevailed in the men's race, stopping the clock at exactly 46 minutes. Elsewhere, Kenyan defending champion Perez Jepchirchir and Edwin Kipyego were victorious at the Marseille to Cassis 20-kilometer road race in France on Sunday. Jepchirchir retained her title with a winning time of 1 hour 6 minutes and 1 seconds as Kipyego covered the distance in 57 minutes and 17 seconds. In Italy, Kenya's Julius Chepkoni and Ethiopian Ehite Bezuayehu prevailed at the Venice Marathon on Sunday. Chepkoni triumphed in the men's race in 2 hours 11 minutes and 8 seconds as Bezuayehu completed the women's race in 2 hours 35 minutes and 15 seconds. Finally, in cricket, the United States of America beat Uganda by 5 wickets in the bronze medal playoff at the ICC Under-19 Cricket World Cup qualifiers in Pandamaran, Malaysia. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James. In Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that is it for this Tuesday, October 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butter in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee it.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we follow up on Sunday's elections in Ivory Coast and Tanzania as votes are being tallied to determine who will lead both countries for the next 5 years. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests for an in-depth analysis on the elections. That's Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.